Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in 30 discrete reaction windows or less. I'm your co-host, Davey, and with me as always, my other co-host, Phil. How you doing, Phil?
Doing all right, Davey.
Yeah, and we have, as has become our usual, we have a guest with us tonight. We got Jonathan Davis. How are you doing, man?
Good, glad to be here.
Yeah. Tonight we are going to be talking about reactions, reactions on fighter cards, upgrades, gambits. As always, we give you a quick rundown of our context. We're recording, when you hear this, imminent release of Power Unleashed is coming out. That will have just gone on pre-order, I believe, so it won't be quite out in the wild. We want to give our usual thanks. We had Cassing, I believe I say his name. He gave us some feedback on Reddit about improving our audio. I don't know how much of that we're going to be able to take on, but very, very much appreciate the tips. Bishop TT hit us up on iTunes and Discord. Had a real nice review. Appreciate that. And Tristan Sadler over on Facebook gave some detailed things. Mostly asked me to never use that record scratch I used in the last episode again because it was a little jarring for him. So we can do that by never making another mistake. So, as always, if you want to get in touch with us, there's at WTHcast or I'm flying around the Facebook and Discord. And you can hit that up. That's the thanks. Well, we like to do a couple of community shout outs. Call it Shadespire. Steven Van, he's looking for some suggestions while he waits for more cards to come out. I think he's already gotten a few good ones, but maybe send him some ideas if you got something you'd want to read on that blog that you want him to do his deep dive into the math and statistics on a card so he can keep some in the bank. You guys got anything you want to shout out?
I don't think so. We our podcast, The Path to Glory, should have a couple episodes coming up in the next week or so, but I'm not really sure. I guess you look forward to that.
That sounds good. Well, speaking of that, little section that I'm about to call What the Hex is Going On With You. So, Jonathan, what the hex is going on with you? As you mentioned, you are on that Path to Glory podcast. You also have a blog, Wigglehammer, which has the maybe my most visited Underworlds page, possibly barring underworldsdb.com, that I use because whenever I think, like, oh, am I forgetting a blog? I'll pop over there and just see what's on the list and go take a look. But tell us what you've been up to. Tell us a little about your projects and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm glad that that's been helpful. Basically, it just started for me because I just, when I got into this game, I had a pretty giant, like, bookmarks tab. And then anytime anyone would ask questions, I would just keep linking them to my stuff. And I was like, I just need to put this on one place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's been useful for me. I'm on there myself quite a bit, looking at my different decks or the different links to everything.
Sure.
I have a couple articles on there too, but I generally try to avoid writing anything that I can.
I like having
somebody else has already written it.
Yeah, I like having that page there for when somebody new gets on Facebook or Discord and they're like, hey, is there any blog about X? And I can be like, link.
Just post. Go here.
Check this out. This probably has what you need.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Other than the podcast, I've mainly just been playing games. I'm in the DFW area of Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth, and we have a couple stores that have small-ish groups of between maybe 4 to 6, and every now and then we'll have a tournament. I think we had 12 people once, so
we try to get
6 to 8 to 12, yeah. It's pretty good. We've been trying to build that recently. We have the largest GW store in the country right here.
Oh yeah.
The Citadel.
That's right. So, have you been there?
Yeah, it's one of the stores that I go to pretty frequently, and they have they've had one event that I've been to, and I think they're going to have some more in the future, so it's pretty cool. And just running lately I've either been running intro games to people, trying to get more people to play, or I've just been playing a lot of Godsworn because I think recently they're just the one I have the most fun with.
I agree. I think they're huge fun to play. I don't know. I always feel like I get to the end of a game and I've enjoyed it. Cool stuff happens when they're on the board, usually.
Yeah, they're so explosive, and I haven't managed to win an event with them yet. I think I've come in third twice.
Yeah,
but I'll just keep trying.
Sure. Tom Bond, if he's an example to go by, you have a long road to hoe. You can make it.
I know. He played a lot over there. I heard stories. He just wouldn't give up.
Yeah. Kudos to him. All right. Phil, what have you been up to?
Getting married.
Yeah. Congratulations. Thanks.
So I have been pretty much not doing anything hobby related for the last few weeks, but definitely starting to move back into stuff. We're just sort of coming to the end of the first cycle of our local league.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that. Sort of gonna have some hopefully fun, maybe try out some alternate play ideas and maybe do some 4-player games, just do some random fun stuff, and then start up another round of the league to get more people interested in the game and get going and hopefully keep this community growing.
Yeah, I like that we kind of hit on that idea of like an in-between league seasons of just have a palate cleanser, get people out and have a, you know, try some of the other stuff that, you know, otherwise doesn't get much air to breathe, and then check it out and then get right back in it.
How do you guys run your leagues? Is it like a slow grow kind of thing, or is it like a competitive thing, or?
Yeah, so it's sort of, we kind of build up to a competitive sort of at the end where, so we're running it in 8 weeks, and so it's basically just a really simple ladder. So whoever you beat, you end up taking their place, and you just, you know, so you can just play random games against anybody, and at any time anyone can end up anywhere in the standings. But then we sort of start to say towards the end of the 8 weeks, you know, we're going to play for Shade Glass at the end for the top 4 people on the ladder. So make sure you're getting those matches that you want. And so people can sort of build up to their level of competitiveness as they go.
Yeah. Cool.
And I think
that sounds great.
Yeah, the only other piece that seemed to be a good one to do is if you miss a week, you slip one spot. So it's not it's not catastrophic for you, but it also keeps someone from jumping up to one of the top 4 and then just retreating and not playing again until they're, you know, in there. So it seems to work pretty well, and it lets everybody feel like they at least have a shot. All you got to do is take down the top guy once and then you're up there. So
yeah, that is cool. Yeah. When you guys do the 4-player games, are you playing just normal 4-player, or do you do the giant, or mix it up?
That is TBD. We've not busted those out. That was the idea. This has been our inaugural season. So when you say how do we run our leagues, it should actually be how do we run our league singular.
Yep. So. All right, Davey, what have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been I realized I have not done much with objective play and also Ghosts, kind of, I guess. So the Thorns of the Briar Queen, I know they're popular out there. There's some cool things they can do, but just out of some quirk, I just haven't played much against them and almost never as them. And so decided to kind of fill out my experience a little bit with that. That's been cool, very different way of playing than some of the other warbands I've been using. And just getting a feel for, whenever I'm playing or whenever I'm looking at a game plan for objective play, I'm like, I don't understand how this is going to work. Like, how am I not just going to get killed or pushed off? But I had some success. I've been had a couple good games, and they've been much more engaged or close than I thought they'd be. So, and some of it is because people forget about objective play. So one of them, it was, I think the objectives were, I had lost the roll and I still ended up with like 3 in my territory, 1 in neutral and 1 in theirs, because somebody was trying to set up a whole bunch of landing spots for Faneway Crystal. And I was like, okay,
sure.
This game just got a whole lot easier, I guess. So, yeah. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. I've been a little bit on a little, I had a real surge of work lately. So it's reduced how much I've been able to get out, but just getting enough maintained, excited to get back in it. All right, but that's the small stuff. We ready to get on to the main topic here of reactions?
Sure.
All right, so
let's do it.
Quick rundown. We're gonna do just a quick overview of the rules of reactions, some of what, when you're talking about reactions, whether it be on a gambit or an upgrade, what makes that particularly strong or weak, timing windows, which is a big deal, difficult to understand, difficult to discuss completely, but we'll get it. I made, we got some, we'll talk about some statistics of what reactions are out there, and then notable reaction cards and interactions, which is a lot of where some of the interesting stuff happens. So that's what you can look forward to. Well, let's kick it off. Rules of reactions. Phil, you want to give us a breakdown here?
Sure. So I guess maybe for somebody who's really new, what is a reaction? So basically, it's going to be a rule printed on either gambits, upgrades, or fighter cards that will say in bold letters, reaction. And then it will sort of tell you in what situation you can use this. As you mentioned, there's lots of these different timing windows, and that comes from there not really being a standardized wording for any of when you can use these. Mm-hmm. I think they've been getting a little bit better lately, but they're still pretty vague, and the wording seems to change ever so slightly in certain places, so you really have to kind of digest the paragraph to figure out when you can use them. And then when you do use them, or when a reaction window would come up to use them, the thing to keep in mind is that only one reaction can be played at a time, and the opportunity goes to the person who's got the next activation first. So if you both have something that happens after a successful attack, but your opponent who's getting attacked wants to do something first, they're going to be able to stop you from playing yours.
Right. And I know one thing for new players, when I've introduced them to the game, one thing that often happens is they'll be looking at a card, they'll see that bold reaction, and they will not notice if they're holding an upgrade or a gambit or a ploy, and so they'll try to play a reaction on an upgrade from their hand. So that's the thing to remember, I guess, is that it still depends on where it happens to be able to use it. Any of those gambits are coming right out of your hand, the other ones, they already have to be on the board.
Yeah, I think another important thing to remember is that reactions are always optional.
Great point. Yeah,
I know that a lot of the time with upgrades or fighter cards, sometimes people will think that they have to react.
Mm-hmm.
You actually can always choose not to.
Right.
Sometimes an important distinction. You know?
Yeah, yep. I think that really came to the fore when Snurk popped up and people were trying to figure out exactly. You know, some people thought. I don't know. Yeah, you're totally right. They are optional. So that's a good point.
A lot of the time you're sitting there waiting, please let me react. But sometimes it's a good choice to wait.
Sure. So based on that, there's a number of things that make reaction cards particularly strong. And for a long time, even though there are a ton of reactions, even in the original Shadespire box, some of the I think particularly the Steelhearts have a number of upgrades with reactions, and Bright Shield's got one and all that. I would always think of it in terms of ploys at the time, gambits now, some of the difference. But when we're talking about the ploys and gambits, one of the strengths of reactions in that set is that you get to commit resources without telegraphing your intentions. So if I play a card that is +1 damage to your next action, or +1 damage for the first attack and the next activation, then that's saying, hey, I'm about to attack you, and I'm about to attack you with, you know, a little bit of extra damage. So now all of a sudden you're saying, okay, like what can I do to mitigate this? If I get that +1 damage instead with something like Twist the Knife, then it's a surprise to you, right? It means mm-hmm. that you didn't have the chance to sidestep away. You didn't have the chance to play what's your awesome Demonic Resilience, which Phil would do to me in our heyday of Farstriders versus Magors. I would put down the Lightning Strike or whatever, the +1 to any attack, +1 damage to any attack with the Farstriders, and that would always be your cue to say, just kidding, you're only going to do one. Make me waste the card. So that's a pretty good strength, is it keeps your cards close to your chest until you're ready to throw them down. Anyone else want to attack any strengths that you want to hit?
The other nice thing is that a lot of the time those cards will just fail. Like if you do +1 damage to the next attack and then you just miss, mm-hmm. like that's really unfortunate. Or what happens for me a lot is I'll use Fueled by Fury.
Yeah.
And then I'll roll a crit and a success.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And like I just feel like I wasted it.
Sure.
But yeah. With the reaction, you only use it when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the attack goes through and, you know, you crit with somebody that like Farstrider or something and you do extra damage, then you don't need to play Pit Trap because you killed them already.
Right.
So
totally.
They're really efficient in that way.
I think it's a little harder to quantify because it's a little more variable, but reactions tend to be strong because since they have such a limited use that they tend to do things that are quite a bit stronger. So the sort of ubiquitous reaction is ready for action,
right?
Where you're reacting to an upgrade being played and then you get to either move or attack for free. And that's crazy strong. Like that's probably the strongest reaction in the game, but it sort of goes to show that by having the limited use situation, it sort of balances how strong the thing you get to do can be, which makes including reactions a pretty good positive for your deck.
Sure. And that touches on one of the weaknesses is that they are restricted on when they can be played. And that exactly what you're talking about there, when you're evaluating a given reaction, you're saying, you're looking at how likely is this event to occur versus how strong is my benefit. So,
right.
You know, ready for action, if you never play an upgrade, well, you know, that's probably a bad situation. Like you will almost always have at some point where you play an upgrade and gaining an extra action in a 12 activation game is an incredibly powerful benefit. Ergo, it ends up being a ubiquitous card, like you were saying. I think we're looking at some of the other ones like...
It isn't Undaunted?
It where might be Undaunted.
After an attack or a ploy takes a friendly fighter out of action, leaving only one surviving friendly fighter, right. And you remove all their wound tokens.
So, yeah.
That one is bad.
So, your window of opportunity has to be like, one of your own got taken out, you only have one left, and then the benefit is... take wounds off your remaining fighter, and if they don't have any wounds and it's worthless, I don't know. So that's an example of evaluating one saying, hey, this condition is too restrictive for the benefit that I gain.
Right.
And this, might as well say it has to be on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the sort of doubly bad part about that is that one, you may not be able to, you know, actually take advantage of this card, but then two, it's also eating up space in your hand if you draw it.
Sure.
Right.
Right.
And then now you just need to get this card out of there because obviously if you're not moving through your power cards, you're not drawing new ones at the end phase. And so it could mean that you didn't draw what you needed later. So obviously including power cards that have very limited use cases can mean that you're just not using them at all, and it's just clogging things up for you.
Yeah, and it can mess with your objectives. Like if you have Ploy Master, if you have Master of War, which say, hey, you got to play play a ploy. Mm. If all the ones, if you know, say you drew something that only had two gambits, and they're both reactions, and those windows never popped up, well, that objective just was not scored. You know, even right. Master of War, something that's generally considered to be real easy. That's another point of evaluation. One more weakness, and this is definitely, I feel like this is popping up more now, that especially with the release of Guardians, where reactions have gone come a little bit more to the forefront, is that they can freeze each other out. Like Phil was talking about when he was running down the rules, only one reaction can be played per timing window, and for certain timing windows that can really leave you with some choices to make as far as on your own. Like maybe I have two, I'd love to play them both, but I can't, or I'd love to use the one on my fighter's card and this one in my hand, but I got to pick one or the other. Or even worse, your opponent can play something during your window and that'll freeze you out. That doesn't come up as much as when I first read about this, you know, this card called this card type with reactions. I thought that would pop up a lot more than it does. But they've just created so many windows that they often don't actually overlap.
Right.
While we're on the subject of timing windows, we'll get into what exactly that means. We'll kind of break some of those down. So you have commonly, we'll get into the statistics later, you have after an attack action, and it may be after an attack action that did one thing or another, but that's usually pretty discreet, right? Like it's once an attack action is done, it's done. more complicated is during an attack action, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is probably the most complicated part of this whole game.
Yeah. Yeah. And not always the easiest to parse. I think it took an FAQ because I think I was assuming like, well, this seems too complicated to try and figure out which. I bet you what they just intended is that anything that said during an attack action would freeze out anything else that said during. And it turned out that was not the case. So
yeah, if you just read the rule book, that's what it sounds like, is that anything during the attack action would block anything else. Mm-hmm. But what it actually ends up seeming like is in the designer's mind, an attack action actually makes up a number of different steps. Mm-hmm. And we don't really know what those are, except for examples that we've been given in the FAQs.
Right. And so we're kind of reading the tea leaves or interpolating to get ourselves into what steps probably exist. And that's where you're most likely to run into conflict. So there's a lot of different durings. There's some that are during an attack action before dice are rolled, or during an attack action that will drive a fighter back, or during an attack action that is successful. And they really break out that these different things are happening at different times, and not always intuitive. So worth checking into.
Yeah. To me, how I always think about it is there is a window, and if two things share the same window, then somebody's going to have priority and mm-hmm. the other one is blocked. So for after an attack action, it's pretty easy because that is one window.
Right.
So even though there are a lot of different criteria for after that window, like my turn is after an attack action that damaged you, mm-hmm. or, you know, tireless assault is after an attack action that failed. Mm-hmm. That's still the same window. They just have different conditions. And so you could never play two after an attack action reactions, no matter what their conditions were.
Right. Right. Exactly.
They would always block each other. Mm-hmm. The problem with the during is you get situations like you could play Potion of Rage to give yourself more dice, and then later you can play Trap after right. you push it back. And they're right, both yeah. enduring, but one of them is way before, one is earlier in the step than the other.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw this this pop up was when they were talking about, you know, hey, could I, if I'm attacking, looks like I'm going to cause damage, my opponent plays Rebound, it fails. Has the during been occupied, or is now a later during the attack action still available? And they say, yeah, absolutely. They say, you know, the trigger for Trap is after the fighter is driven back, which is a different during to when the attack is determined to be successful or not. It's like, oh no. All right.
Yeah.
But Rebound does share the same window as Twist the Knife.
Yeah. That is, a significant shared window. One of only a few.
But it's before last chance.
yep. Yeah. If you couldn't tell, there's a lot of misunderstanding about these, and everyone should petition GW to clean this up as much as they physically can.
Yeah. We were hypothesizing that they might have to find a way to clean it up for the Underworlds Online, because they're going to have to code in which things mm-hmm. occupy which. And when right. you're faced with it from that perspective, then all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, we might have a little bit of a problem here. So
yeah. I mean, a computer has to know what mm-hmm. the discrete scenario is in which this works. So yeah.
And I'll be honest, I'm surprised that there's not more discussion points. Maybe it has something to do with the particular reactions that are popular don't overlap as much. But having read, I don't know, like I think I've always resolved these pretty amicably, given that this is the fuzziest part of what is generally a pretty well-written game, I think people get through it pretty well.
Yeah, there's really only a few windows that are confusing, like the Rebound one is kind of strange. And they actually sort of cleared that up by saying the only things that interact with this window are as follows.
Yeah.
And that's in the FAQ. And it's like
twist the knife, and a card that nobody uses. There was like a leader card that no retreat.
Oh, leader pack.
No retreat from the leader pack, which, you know, I was reviewing these after I made the spreadsheet. I'm like, surely that's not true. And I went back, like, yeah, it's true. but even as we talk about no retreat, that's got a really weird, so you'd think that it would have a window where whose text very closely mirrored rebounds, but even that doesn't, it, like, if you read that, you wouldn't look at it and say, so that one is plays during an attack action that targets your leader after the dice are rolled. Your leader cannot be driven back by the attack action. What? whereas twist is during friendly fighter's attack action that has a range of one and will succeed. Like, those are two different sets of words, and like, that didn't help me at all. Like, now, I mean, you said discreetly, so that solves that particular one for me. That just makes other things more difficult. But
there's a few confusing ones right now. Like, Crown of Avarice is one of the new cards.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and it's somewhere in there with Last Chance, but I'm not sure if you can play Last Chance first.
Yeah.
And not die, and then if you die, can you react with Crown of Avarice, or like, are they both happening at the same time?
Right.
It's really not very clear.
So
that's what FAQs are for, I guess.
Yeah, which we're due, right? Another, I think this is a good time to point out actions and activations, right? So
sure.
When an action ends, and this is again not something that you would have, it was something that was kind of popped up in an FAQ. They're answering the question on something else, but they say the action and the activation end simultaneously. So that the last, if you're making a charge, that's technically two actions. There's a move action there, which you'll still not be at the end of activation. But then after that attack activation, that's the last part of that activation. So when that attack action ends, then the activation also ends. So in that case, you have two windows that are ending at the same time. And that's the after an attack action, and after an activation, and that can get significant for a few cards in particular.
So I hate this ruling.
Yeah.
I hate this ruling so much, because what it means is if you attack me and push me back and want to play Pit Trap during your activation, but I have Snurk and want to inspire him.
Yeah.
I can inspire Snurk and you can't play Pit Trap.
Right.
Yep. Yeah.
And like, there's like 20 different ridiculous things like that. Like,
yeah.
Snurk is just hilarious.
Or conversely, the other way around, like, say you're making an attack action and like, oh, it's important to inspire Snurk. I'm going to make this move. I'm going to react with a scurry, which is after a move action. I just iced myself out of Snurk activating, because that was after the action, which was also after the activation.
So, right. You'd have to charge so that the reaction took place before the attack.
Yeah.
I'm really not sure what they meant. Like, did they mean to do that? Because
my theory is that they looked at it and like, I'm not sure how we say when the activation ends if we don't say that it ends at the end of the action. So I think they were just kind of painted into a corner on it, would be my theory. But,
yeah, right. But the weird thing that they've created is this other space in between the activation and the power step.
Right.
And for example, like the card Keep Chopping that wants you to do four attacks in different activations. If you play my turn, that isn't during your opponent's activation.
And it's not during the power step. It's somewhere
in between. It's not during the power step. Yeah. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Same with aggressive defense. So it's just this weird like middle ground. I feel like it would have been easier just to say that the activation ends after everything else that happens in the activation.
Sure. Yeah. That would,
but
I'd buy that.
Maybe they have a reason for it. I'm just not sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of different. We hit some interactions there. Before we jump into some more of those, I'm going to run you down some statistics. Like I may have mentioned earlier, I put every reaction into a spreadsheet. And then tried to break them down into what window they occupied, tried to parse the wording. There were 162 power cards that included a reaction of some kind. There's plenty of fighters that do as well. We'll cover those real quick. The most common window was after an attack action, And of the 162, 67 of the cards occupied those. And then I further broke those down into offensive and defensive. Offensive would be like after a friendly attack action, and defense would be after an enemy attack action. It may not specifically say that. And then there's a handful that are either. So that's a pretty even split. And then all the other windows were dramatically less than that. And some of that is due to how balkanized the during and attack action ones are. Those split up into so many different ones that there's just not a lot of overlap. But
my hope would be that in future versions they'll break the attack action down into like actual steps.
Yeah, that would be excellent.
Like even if they just numbered them, like yeah, this happens during step two.
Yeah, right. Yeah, totally.
Perfect.
Numbers are keywords, and then it would make that pretty clean. Took a look at so each of these I also marked what warband they're from, and I was going to ask you guys, but I realized I've sent you the notes, so you have it sitting right in front of you. So ask the listener, give yourself a second. Which warband do you think had the most reactions on power cards? My instinct before putting it together, I don't know, did you guys, before you saw the numbers, would you have had a guess?
I would have probably guessed something like Thorns.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that's what I would have sent. Yeah.
Trying to score off of reactions.
Sure. It turned out to be Cursebreakers, and we're just talking their power cards. They had a bunch of them, eight of those. And then my guess was Fiends. They came in at 7 just because they had so many, like, if a guy dies, do this cards.
Which are all so bad.
many of them are a little challenging. It's one fun thing about doing a project like this is it forces you to look at some cards you haven't looked at in a while, and then your mad scientist brain starts coming up with bad ideas. But one thing I did enjoy as an example, and again we're calling out specific cards, but one thing that I thought was an example of them doing a little bit better on reaction window timing is that there's a couple Cursebreaker cards in there that specifically occupy. There's a Lightning Whip and Hurricane Step.
Yep.
Is that? And those are both after friendly attack action where they come in. And so they can't both be done. So you could put them both on one fighter, but you could only do one at a time. I thought that is how you design a reaction card. Here's a really nice bonus, which is +1 damage. You would think it's kind of a great strength analog, although there's some different interactions that, you know, versus Masterstroke or Precise Use of Force or different things like that that play differently. But you design that. Here's a pretty powerful effect, but it can't stack with this other quite different effect because of it being a reaction and occupies that window. That was the one where I was like, yes, okay, someone gets it. This is how they should work in my mind.
I would agree.
It
felt intentional and it feels well balanced to keep you from just stacking all the really powerful buffs on one fighter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of strange that they did the trap and pit trap thing together.
Yeah, that you could use them both. Yeah. Well, so that's power cards, 162 of those. As far as fighters, you've got Bright Shield, Zarkus Gartok, the Brimstone Horror has his little shooting thing, which I don't think there's any more accurate attack in the game than the Brimstone Horror's follow-up two-sword attack. It feels like 90% of the time it lands. I don't know. It's a heartbreaker for me. All the goblins have it. Not the squigs, but the goblins have scurry. Spitroom's got that hot poison puff.
Yeah.
Bjorgen Thundrick has got his, and then all the trees have a reaction of some kind. All the guardians have something. So that is the pool of reactions we're working with. We've kind of been hitting some as they just came up naturally, but let's hit up some notable reactions and some notable interactions that we think are worthy of discussing. And we can go back and dive into something we've mentioned before if we want. But anybody got anything they want to throw out right away?
So not necessarily Thundrick's reaction specifically, but just how much confusion it's caused about how lethal hexes work. And how you can, like, because everyone wants to use it offensively and be like, so if I move Thundrick after I've reacted to create these, I can hurt people, right? And it's like, no.
Yeah.
definitely not how that works. So, although I think his reaction is fairly straightforward, it's caused probably more discussion recently than a lot of reactions that I've seen.
Yeah. I mean, it's had the side benefit of getting people to educate, getting people a little more educated on lethal hexes, what they, you know, when they sure. do, if you confusion into them. Basically, you got to move into it or you got to be pushed into it. And yep. any other way that you might end up in a lethal hex will not damage you.
So. And the other thing is, it says that it only works during the opponent's activation.
Well, right. I mean, right.
They're not even happening.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But the other interesting thing about his and any of the other fighters with reactions is, technically right now, that counts as an action.
Yes. Yeah, that's something we should have mentioned.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Sort of an interesting FAQ that came out of Scurry.
Not fond of it. But
yeah.
An action is a reaction is an action in the glossary.
Right. In the rule book, it does say a reaction is an action. And so if a reaction's on a card, then it is an action. But some of them sure don't feel much like action.
Yeah. Right.
Hopefully we get some clarification on
that. Sure.
I guess I get that they're actions, but I don't know if they're that kind of an action.
Yeah. Yeah. Like something
I think they
like,
should be their own thing.
Sure. Yeah. Something like Scurry or like the Brimstone's extra attack, that makes more sense than some of the Guardians ones, which are like, oh, do an extra damage. Like what exact action did you just do?
So yeah. The other thing that's funny about that is there's the card for Skaven, Skitter Scurry.
Mm. Oh yeah.
And it's after you do an action, push yourself one hex. And it's a reaction. So theoretically, react to that reaction.
So the only
obviously you can't.
Yeah, but. I was looking into that as far as when the relics, because they have the after an action draw two cards. I was like, wait, could you then react to drawing two cards to draw two cards and like just I did an action, now I'm going to draw my entire power deck. but I think it specifically says that actions on fighter cards or reactions on fighter cards are actions.
Right.
It doesn't, I mean, you would logically assume that applied to other things, but I mean, as written, I guess that's what you could argue means that you can't draw an infinite number of cards or surf Scritch all the way across the board because he took a step sideways or something like that. So
yeah, that's true. I don't know if they've ever clarified whether an action that you take on an upgrade is that fighter's action.
Yeah, whether it's, I mean, I think some of them are clearly actions, like make this attack action, but I don't know if by default, just by being a reaction on an upgrade, whether that also counts as an action.
The fighter would be making the attack action, but I don't know if they're making the react.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just strange.
It can't.
I mean, obviously that isn't how it works.
Right. Otherwise, madness ensues. So.
Yeah. So hopefully they clear that up, because that's probably one of the main questions that I've seen online. It's like, wait a minute, you mean this counts for Keep Them Guessing? Mm.
Yeah,
Brimstone sure and Scurry can do it in like two activations.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, crazy. So. And that's one of those, especially that FAQ, that is one against the newer player. It kind of feels bad to have to explain sometimes because they're like, what what crazy shenanigans are you trying to pull on me? Like, no, it's in the FAQ, I swear. So, yeah.
It can feel kind of gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. I know one for me that I think one of my favorites, and it keeps me putting this card back in decks, perhaps when there's better ones to do. I like Mirror Move in there, specifically when my turn, when I was seeing it. For a while, I felt like I saw my turn in every single deck. Mirror Move is a reaction, lets you, after your opponent pushes a fighter, you can pick a different fighter and push them the same number. My turn comes in after an attack action. You can push your fighter that just took damage, push that, and then make an attack. But because Mirror Move allows you to push in reaction to the my turn push, you can then push the targeted fighter, push away, and basically get out of attack range again. Retrospect, I mean, that's kind of like a power card for a power card sort of thing. So it's maybe not that great, but it is making them burn a restricted power card, I suppose. And it has other uses, but that was, when that goes off, man, that feels real, real good.
Quick thinker light.
Yeah.
And they feel dumb for using the push.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Especially if they didn't need to. Yeah. I've definitely had that happen where they're like, oh, you know, I guess it'd be handy to be one space over here for maybe some vague thing that I want to do next turn. You're like, goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mirror move in general is an interesting reaction because its trigger depends on when the push takes place.
Mm, exactly.
And so it actually blocks trap. If they drive you back, you can block trap.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
Push somebody else or push them. It interacts with Snark really strangely, where if he bumps you and pushes you back, you can play mirror move and push him back.
Yeah,
and it just stops his whole scatter.
Yeah, which I get it, but without the FAQ, I wouldn't necessarily assume that it would have stopped the whole scatter unless I was missing some. But yeah.
No, I don't think. I don't know if that was intuitive either.
Yeah. Conversely, you can wait until he's done and then go three. So it's got a lot of, it's got some great play into goblin decks for sure.
Definitely.
Really good against Commanding Stride too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I had that exact combo. I was trying to keep, I think I was playing Max on the webcam and he Commanding Strided, Stormsire over, and I was like, ooh, I need to get, I had some one of the chain rafts, and like, oh cool, I'm gonna push this guy three away and get, and there was nowhere, I could not get far enough away because I was already in the corner, so even I pushed right into the corner, I was still in range and I didn't have enough gas to scoot around. I was like, ah, that feels pretty bad.
But with all the lethals around, you can actually do like 2 damage to somebody if they're next to a lethal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
In and out and in. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah. I think Galangin's defensive reaction. So you talk about because the person having the next activation has priority, he has the opportunity to shut down a whole lot of things. So think about any of these gambit card reactions that allow you, hey, if you miss attack after an attack action where this that by this fighter that failed, make another attack action. If Galangin crits, not only has he critted and done a damage back to you, but he knocked out your ability to use that card, which is a pretty feel bad because those are both occupying the after an attack action window.
Yeah. Just more reasons not to attack Galantan unless you absolutely have to, or you've got a really good plan for taking him out. Because
I don't.
Man, he's a heartbreaker.
Yeah. I don't have any more reasons.
I had a game the other day where I was playing with Godsworn. I had Allah with Glory Seeker. And I was like, I can do this. I can kill Galantan. So I attacked him. He crit me. I take a damage. I have ready for action in my hand. I'm like, I can still do this.
Oh no.
So I attack again. Then he crits me again.
Oh.
And I die. It was very sad.
Well, here's an interesting thing to, I don't know if you had any other cards in your hand, but if you're worried about a specific reaction, so let's say you're worried about, you really think they have rebound in their hand, or you're worried about getting critted back by Galangin. If you can make an attack that is not during your activation, so if you ready for action in the opponent's power step, all of a sudden you have the next activation. So these cards we traditionally think of not having priority, now all of a sudden Twist the Knife blocks rebound rather than vice versa because you're the one with the next activation. That's some pretty deep, way down the rabbit hole thinking. But if you ever correctly like predicted what was in the hand of cards and pulled that off, you feel like a tactical genius. So, but I think it does apply particularly with Galangin. If you have something that's after an attack action and you're worried about taking that, all right, well then I'll adjust when I'm going to use this ready for action attack.
Right.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah. If you're going to pit trap him, definitely do it before you're about to activate. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other notables that we want to hit up here?
I guess because you have it here and it is a good one. Because really the Sylvaneth in general just have a lot of different activations. And I know I've misplayed it a couple times and had to read it more carefully. Their leader, whatever her name is.
Ilthari?
Yeah, Ilthari. She has to succeed with that spell, and it has to be a crit.
Sure.
So I've crit, and then they've crit me back, and it doesn't actually go off.
Yeah.
And then if you want to heal her, you can't play a reaction because it's after. And the same goes for Scathiel, and the same goes for Anslain. You have to pick between, you know, Pit Trap or whatever it is.
Right.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I think that warband in general makes it way more. You just have to pay way more attention to your reactions because they all have one.
Yep. Yeah, if you are playing with them or playing against them, that's the time to really kind of be on your toes and being paying attention to what exact window is being used by the cards to make sure. And so if you have something in hand that's after an attack action and you're playing against them, bear that in mind. You may want to burn one of those in a less than ideal in order to freeze out one of those reactions.
Yeah.
I think another one that's for a lot of newer players, it's a kind of a confusing point is there's a lot of reactions that will cause a successful attack to all of a sudden not deal damage. And an attack that does not deal damage is no longer successful. So if you last chance out of something, that attack is no longer successful, which means that attack failed, which means that there's now other reactions that might apply to this case. It's important for a number of reasons, but yeah, any attack action that did not cause damage is counts as a fail. And that'll pop up with, like we said, Last Chance or Soul Trap or Tethered Spirit.
Yeah, and if it was a spell, then it is not cast.
Yeah, oh, that's a real good point, right. That's a fun way to keep Stormsire from inspiring his Last Chance out of his Fulmination. He's just going to do it real quick in the Power Step anyway, but you can feel good for a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've covered a pretty good spread over that of the notables and such. Has anybody else got anything they want to hit on reactions here?
I think we covered it pretty well.
Yeah, I think the only comical one that we didn't mention is Bright Shield. Bright Shield's got that Righteous Strike.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Infinite
make
attacks.
Exactly. Make this attack. If you miss, you can make this attack again. And I think that feels like another one where somebody was like, does this mean infinite attacks? And the developer's looking at it like, yeah, I guess it does. So is an after, so you can break that chain if you have some kind of reaction to after. But that's a funny one where you can like, I'm about to attack. You have anything that can block this? No? Okay. We're going to roll. Do you want me to roll this until it succeeds or you just want to take the damage? Yeah. I would say a significant portion of the FAQ is taken up by some of these windows. And so that's a good place. If you have something messy, then take a look. And Underworld's DB is good for this. If there's an FAQ that applies to the card, he's linked to that FAQ, and it's sitting right there. You can hit the question mark. So if you're including a card in your deck, hit the question mark, take a peek, and see if there's something that applies to it. But not a foolproof way, but a good way if you're building a deck to double-check that you are handling some of the sketchier situations correctly.
Knowing the rules like pretty well is one of the probably the best things that you can do to like help you win games and stuff, because it really stinks when you're in the middle of a game and then you realize that something doesn't work the way you thought it did.
Yeah.
And then like the other person feels bad because then they have to like, it can be hard to walk back on stuff.
Sure.
Definitely protect yourself by memorizing that document.
Yeah. And it takes sometimes getting burned real bad to like realize, I know I was playing with the, Farstriders and I thought what was the dream hand were of Trap, Pit Trap, and Rapid Volley, where you take another shot. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna do all this damage, and then I used the wrong card. Like I froze myself out from the Rapid Volley by using Pit Trap, I think it was, and then I was getting ready to play Rapid Volley because they both occupy the after attack. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm only taking the one shot. And I'm like, damn,
yep,
that was a mistake. So if you get burned, it stinks. Learn from it and go hit the books, or just be okay with getting burned next time, I guess. All right. Well, I think that about covers it. We reactions are a little bit of a lighter subject than the massive, backbreaking warband reviews we've been doing. So, We're going to sign out here. If you, as usual, if you want to get in touch with us, it's at WTHcast on Twitter or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Or if you see one of the episodes getting posted up, feel free to pop something in there. Jonathan, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can reach out to me either through the wigglehammer.wordpress blog. I still haven't paid for that. That name, it's how lazy I am with that blog. Or Path to Glory on Facebook. Or I'm on Facebook. I'm pretty much addicted. So if you ask a really strange question about rules on any of the big Facebook groups, I'll probably chime in.
I've been summoned. So,
yeah, exactly. Other than that, I do a podcast with Aman. We focus on competitive play and different things like that. We should have a couple episodes coming up that I think is going to be about just community growth in general and ways to help your community grow and get more players, because this is a great game.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. I think we'll see our next episode. We'll probably be doing some talking about the Power Unbound. Breakdown. Hopefully we got some nice juicy ones in there. I don't know. See if my prediction of a upgrade that makes a non-caster a caster comes to pass. Keep predicting it. At some point, the spaghetti is going to stick to the wall. We'll be good. So
someday.
My hope is that would be for Narvia or Tarash.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
We'll see.
Phil's two favorite fighters in the whole game.
Oh, yes. Tarash.
They're the only two fighters that I think the warband would be better if they weren't in it.
Yeah. As always, you can get the rest of our content at themortalrealms.com website. All our episodes go up there, as well as the usual spots that you find them. We've got the other podcasts that our crew does. And if you drop us a review on whatever you're listening to, that's real helpful. It helps raise our visibility in other places, and people have been doing a great job of that. I really appreciate the time. It's been awesome. Your recommended listening for this episode is Harbor Coat by REM. That's off of Reckoning. And with that, we're going to say we'll see you later. For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
This is Jonathan.
I know what some of that means, and some of that is well beyond my ability to do anything about. So, sure. More than 30. I'm gonna start it off with a lie. If they only knew, right. Maybe they will after the credits. We'll see.